I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
I'm Susanna Constantine, and this is My Wardrobe Malfunction, where I start talking to a very special guest about their relationship with clothes, and then we wander off onto all sorts of crazy tangents. This is our 12th Zoom episode, recorded in lockdown in June 2020. You can also find it as a video version on our website at mywardmal.com. Why don't you join our pajama party and email your funny clothing stories to us at help@mywardmal.com. Finally, and I know I bang on about this all the bloody time, but please subscribe, give us a 5-star review and follow us on the usual socials at mywardmal. Then maybe I'll stop mentioning it, but I doubt it. Right. This week's special guest is the Mighty Skin, lead singer and songwriter of Skunk Anansie and one of my dearest friends. God, I love this woman. And she's got her brand new memoir coming out next week on the 24th of September. It's called It Takes Blood and Guts, and I cannot wait to read it. But in the meantime, let's grab the handles, open my wardrobe doors, and find out what's inside. Today, I have a very old and very dear friend, Skin from Skunk Anansie.
Hi.
How long has it been since we saw each other?
It's going to be a few years now.
Yeah.
I think in the back of your car with Esme once, and she was singing Highway to Hell. Remember that? You put it on, you put it on, you went, watch this. You put it on, and she went, Highway to Hell. I was like, oh my God, so cute.
Because life happens, but we have our friends and our memories. And you and I, we were joined at the hip, weren't we, for about kind of 4 years. We were like
like running around to different places. And then I moved. I'm always moving.
Yeah.
I was in Los Angeles. I was in Ibiza. I'm just around the place. So, yeah. It's nice to see your lovely face.
Oh, God, and you, Skin.
I feel like I've been seeing you all the time because I was watching your whole hair thing.
Oh, my God. Yeah, not your problem, Skin.
My problem. Why not? Yeah, it's nice to see you.
Oh, my darling. So you're living in... How long have you been in New York for now?
I got here the day they did the lockdown here. So... I literally got, I had a bunch of work here, DJing and stuff that I was going to be doing here. And I got my visa on the morning and my flight was that evening, which was 2 hours later, they completely closed it down. So I've been here since really. I've had my whole lockdown here with my other half.
Yeah.
I think mid-March I've been here since. Yeah.
So are you renting somewhere or?
My other half already has a place here.
Okay, good.
I mean, it's a very nice flat.
Yeah.
We have one upstairs and one downstairs, so we're a bit small.
Nice. So you feel like it's kind of you're in a home rather than some kind of rent.
Yeah, no, I'm definitely surrounded by all my things. I've got my guitar, I've got my DJ set, I got some clothes. So it's kind of a home away from home.
Yeah. But it's, it's kind of like looking back at your music, Skin, it's kind of as relevant as it ever was. It's almost, if you could have been winding the movie forward, you would have been making this music. So like Little Baby Swastika and other songs that call out racism.
Exactly. Little Baby Swastika was our very first single, which was a Radio 1 single that they did. I think they did a competition. They played three bands and everybody had to choose which band they wanted to make to kind of basically produce a record, a little seven inch vinyl. I mean, they chose us and they ended up, I think they were going to do 200 and they ended up doing 1,000.
Amazing.
That was the very start of our career, right up until the new single, which is not so new, This Means War.
Yeah.
It's kind of a topic that we're not a political band. You know, I always say we're not a political band, we're a band with politics in us.
Yeah.
So, you know, we have lots. I mean, imagine if you've got a friend and that friend's always banging on politics, a bit bloody boring, isn't it? You're like, oh,
yeah,
put fucking sock in it. So we have lots of things that we talk about. But yeah, it's one of the things we keep coming back to because it just lands in your face wherever you go. You know, you encounter racism, you encounter...
When I think of your music, especially weirdly, your solo album, do you remember that? Well, of course you remember it. I love that album. But you've always... For you, it's always been about the music. It's never, ever, ever been about the fame. It's been about the music, creativity, how you are perceived on stage more than the fame. Because you've done so much that's kind of like truly remarkable stuff that's remained under the radar a little bit.
That's the fun in it for me. The fun in it is the quality. You know, the fame is kind of almost like a lovely byproduct that you have to have, and you kind of, you know, have as a consequence of doing very well, you're going to be a bit famous. But it's kind of what you are, as famous as you want to be, I always think.
True.
If you want to be in the magazines and be on the front page of the Sun, everybody knows what you need to do that. And if you don't, everybody knows what you need to do not to have your face up there. But sometimes it's unavoidable. I mean, some things are just, the way the press is now, I think it's very clickbaity. So
if I
do one thing, and if it can be twisted into a bit of clickbait, then you're going to have your face blown doing something silly anyway. I think the quality of the music and the artistic thing for me always comes first. Fame is fun, though, isn't it? It's a laugh.
Yeah, well, it can be. And I mean, for some, it can be and it can't be. But for you, it must have been, and still, you're so visually striking. So, and you've always had this incredible style, and for me it's like when I've seen you in the past, it's like you've worn clothes as sort of installations, almost like art as opposed to clothes. So when you've been dressed by Hussein Chalayen, Gareth Pugh, who else has dressed you? Noki.
Lots of people. I think on stage I like things to be, I mean, you're on stage, aren't you? Let's make a show of it. I mean, this is, I think, the way it's like all exaggerated and make a show and all over the top. And I like that feeling. But, and then the rest of the time, I just kind of like to, it's really just about feeling good in myself and feeling good in my own skin and in my own clothes. And you know, it's a bit weird now, literally, if I'm going to the supermarket, I'm putting on a full McQueen, because it's like when you're not getting any chance to dress up, walking to the supermarket, and they're like, what does she look like? But it's New York, you know, nobody really cares. Some people are in there in their leotards, you know, but it's a weird time for fashion right now. But I like to be over the top on stage, you know, I like the lights to hit me, and it's like, whoa, and it's all a show. You know, it's a bit of glamour. It's a bit of a
you also, when you you are on stage, you come across being quite angry.
Only in the angry songs.
Well, see, only on the angry song. But you're so not that person. It's like, I remember the first time I heard you speak, I nearly passed out. It was such a surprise. This little squeaky voice, you know, instead of the kind of growl that was there before.
I mean, I think on stage it's just kind of it depends on what song, because I mean we got some funny songs and some sexy songs and some heartbroken songs, but I definitely, you know, when I was younger, songs like Selling Jesus and Yes It's Fucking Political and whatever, it's like, you know, you can't really say Yes It's Fucking Political. That was fun, you know, it's fun to kind of go on stage and stomp around and be crazy. But I think because it's so in your face, maybe that's the bit that gets publicized more in some ways.
Yeah,
the songs that we have on stage, they're all kinds of songs. Some are just jump around disco songs.
Yeah.
And some are kind of lonely, heartbreaking moments. It's all in
there. This is Esme. Do you remember Esme?
Oh my God. You may be an AC/DC fan. I remember being in your car when you were little.
Probably.
You're like Highway to Hell. Remember that? You're mad about, oh my God, you're so big.
I know. I haven't seen you in ages.
I know. I'm just like, I mean, I'm stuck in New York. I'm not stuck. I like it here.
Yeah.
I can't leave at the moment.
How important was your image compared to, well, not as hard to compare, I guess, but your image when you first came, when you first came to everyone's attention, you were deemed to be the kind of most extraordinary and singular, unique person in the way you dress since David Bowie and Ziggy Stardust. So you're, you know, you were Skin, but then you're also Deborah.
I mean, I think, if I'm really honest, when we first started, I didn't really know that much about fashion. I didn't really give a fuck. I was just, all just in my day clothes.
Yeah.
Well, because I think in the early days, it was grunge. It was anti-fashion. It was, yeah, you know, you kind of had to look like you walked in on stage or something you just dragged off the floor that morning. You know, it was very much kind of like anti-fashion, which in itself is a fashion, you know, which in itself is a look to not want to be blah, blah. And then as time goes along and you kind of start meeting people and you learn a lot more. I mean, when I was at university and was at college, I was really into my looks and really into my fashion, but it wasn't designer fashion because I couldn't fucking afford it, to be quite honest. But I always liked to look, and I always liked to look cute and good and fanciable, I guess. And then I think in those early days, it was just literally a skinny top and baggy pants. I mean, when you're young and skinny, you can get away with anything, I find. Yeah. It really doesn't matter. Everything looks good.
Yeah.
Horrific to know that now. You know,
because if only we appreciated it more back then. Because I was looking at you now, I can't quite see, but it looks like your boobs have got bigger. They have. My God, Skin, they have.
They have. That happened about 10 years ago. It's really bloody annoying. I hate it. I keep having conversations to say, well, I should get them reduced because the line that I like, I'm not very curvaceous, but the line that I kind of like is kind of almost androgynous, a bit boyish.
Yeah, because that's
And that's my kind of vibe. And now I'm kind of I'm forced to be womanly, Susanna.
And I keep saying this, and you know, it's an ongoing conversation, but you can't be fashionable and have boobs. I mean, you've got an advantage because you have these amazing features, you've got your, you know, your lack of hair, and you're very striking, so you can get away with a lot. But it's interesting that now you have to be more feminine in the way you dress.
Now I'm forced to be a little bit more feminine. I'm forced to be a little bit more curvaceous, but I kind of don't want to be. So I end up kind of like, you know, putting caps on and, you know, being silly and being a little. I mean, I love being feminine, and I don't particularly like being butch. That's not me at all. I love being feminine and I love being androgynous, which I think is a very chic kind of thing.
Yeah.
I don't like being butch, like mannish kind of thing. That's not my not anybody else, but, you know, my thing. And I find that I'm the way that fashion is, you know, it's a bunch of gay guys like designing for skinny boys basically. Yeah. And 12-year-old girls.
Yeah.
And when you get older, there are certain labels I love, like Westwood, that really kind of cater for that, Comme des Garçons, that cater for that. But it's kind of like I'm working out how to grow old gracefully and disgracefully at the same time, you know, because I really think that you get to a point where you just don't give a flying fuck.
Yeah.
And why should you? You know, you're your own person, you feel very comfortable in your clothes, and you get to a point where you're like, I'm just going to wear what I'm going to wear, and I love it, and I'm much more into being functional and happy and my mood.
So what is that? What is that look, that kind of happy look, that sort of...
It's kind of part yardy, part androgynous. Now I've got boobs, I'm wearing tighter tops.
Mm-hmm.
Colour. I like a lot of black, but I like a lot of colour. Like when I go to Ibiza, I wear different colour every day. I'll colour block in orange. When I go to my yoga retreats, for instance, I'll do one day orange, one day yellow, one day blue. I love colour. I love white. But, you know, in London, you kind of keep falling back into black because it's just so easy to get cool black stuff and mix and match it. You know, you can wear black things with other black things and you're doing fine. It's just
kind of a bit
easy.
But who were your role models when you were growing up, your kind of style role models?
When I was growing up, I would say Blondie.
Okay.
She was my first kind of role models. Bowie.
Yeah.
Bowie. Grace Jones, obviously.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, lady. You hear that?
Okay. Nee, 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 nee.
When I was growing up, I liked Blondie. She was probably my first style icon because I remember I was 10 years old and I used to watch Top of the Pops religiously, literally. Yeah. I mean, I was a little black girl in Brixton surrounded by blackness and black culture and whatever. And then I had this little window to another world, and, you know, because in those days things were a lot more separate. And I used to watch Top of the Pops, and Top of the Pops was my secret little friend. And I remember that moment when Blondie came on and she had a stripy dress and she was standing there like doing a little flick. And I remember thinking, that's amazing. I want to do that. And she looked great. And I think that was my first inkling of fashion. My very first was my school uniform.
Really? You loved your school uniform?
Oh my God. St. Martin's in the Field Girls' School. And we had... My mum went to this one shop that sold all of the school uniforms and she spent £105. And for that, I got three sets of skirt and blouse and jumper. I got the summer uniform, which was like a pinafore kind of dress, a black and white and red square dress, and a hockey kit, because we played hockey, and swim uniform and tennis outfit. And I absolutely loved it. I loved being a smart, perfectly ironed St. Martin in the Field school girl. That was my really first fashion moment. And then my second was Blondie. Because by the time you get to 13, when you're 11, you're like, oh, that's cute, cool. Yeah. You get to 13, you're like, oh, no, God, no.
The hormones kick in.
Oh, yeah, then you're like, I don't want to wear this. But then it was Blondie. Boy George rocked my world. I remember being a kid and being rocked by Boy George. Yeah. And that whole kind of hip-hop fashion when that started. And yeah, like Grace Jones, Blondie, a bit of Bowie. I liked kind of like how the reggae boys dressed in Jamaica, because we used to go to Jamaica when I was a kid. And the Yardie look was so lovely, like really skinny, perfectly flare jeans, a bit of a white sock, steppers, clean little jumpers. Really, I mean, Jamaicans dress really cleanly and really beautifully when they're going out, and I love that little.
Yeah, it's almost preppy, isn't it?
Yeah,
it's like a way of dressing.
Tidy, preppy kind of thing.
Yeah,
A little bit cowboy because they love country music in Jamaica.
Yeah, do they really? I didn't know that.
Oh my God!
Really?
Islands in the Stream. Dolly Parton was Jamaican number one. That is what you are. Stay away from me. Do another. that was Jamaica number one for 16 weeks.
How amazing.
I was raised on reggae and country.
Yeah.
The Lynn, Stand By Your Man. You know, all of those people.
Amazing. Weird.
Jamaicans love country and western. But they do reggae versions.
Reggae, which must be sublime. I've never heard that. You're gonna have to tell me. But
I'll send you 1,000 volts of Holt.
Yeah, please. Have you heard Serpent with Feet?
Amazing.
Amazing.
What a voice. The first time I was a bit like, ooh, it's a bit much. And I'm like, oh, it's a bit much. Oh, it's a bit much. You know, yeah. It takes a minute. Yeah. But amazing, amazing voice, amazing song.
Amazing. And so different and unusual. I was quite chuffed to find that, but he's only done an EP so far. So Skin, when did you become Skin?
Skin is short for skinny, and it's interesting because when Jamaican kids, being skinny is called maga, you know, unumaga, you're skinny. It's not a good thing, you know. Jamaicans like a bit more, especially when I was a kid, they like a bit more meat, and I was always being taken the piss out of because I was super, super skinny. And it wasn't a good thing. And it wasn't until the band started. And I remember I did a session with Corinne Day, amazing photographer, for The Face. And she'd just done Kate Moss. And kind of the opposite of what's happening now, she made it cool to be skinny. I mean, yes, there's a whole debate about skinny. There's a whole debate about skinny shaming, fat shaming. And I'm completely conscious of that. But for me, it was the other way around. It was kind of like being skinny was not seen as a good thing. It was not seen positively. But that was my natural thing. So I was trying to hide myself in big and baggy clothes and not show my arms. And it was when I did that shoot with Corinne Day and the Kate Moss thing that I kind of started to feel comfortable about it. And so skinny became a good thing. It wasn't necessarily a bad thing. In the way that people who are big now, they can say, it's not a bad thing anymore. You know, everybody's happy with everybody's shape, you know. But back in those days, skinny was a bad thing. It wasn't cool. And so I just kind of embraced that, and I call myself Skin, which was short for skinny, just because it's just easier to say, really, and kind of cooler, you know. But really all my band and all my friends and everybody just calls me Skinny. Yeah. Not so skinny anymore, though. I wish.
But, my love, when did you shave your head first? How old were you?
I shaved my head at 22.
Yeah.
And, you know, hair never worked for me. It just didn't work. It never really grew. I never really knew what to do with it. I mean, you know, my mum wasn't into fashion or into hairstyles. I didn't have that training. I had three brothers.
Yeah.
And my mum was just busy out being a nurse. And I just had none of my school friends. They were just all gorgeous without doing a stick, not even a lipstick, any of them wore. And I went for university and I came out the other end. And then I was just starting wearing headscarves because I just couldn't be asked. I was really into everything from here down. I was like concerned about that. And then I remember I was just like, I'm really over this hair. I'm going to shave it off. So I had my friend's boyfriend. I knew he had a pair of clippers. I come around and cut my hair. So he came round and he cut it. And I goes, no, lower, lower. And he cuts it more. He goes, lower, lower. And he goes, I'm not cutting it any lower. I'm not cutting it anymore. It's not girly. And I'm like, no, just cut it low. It's going to work. And he cut it down to about there and then absolutely point blank refused. And then I had to go to this famous barbershop in Brixton and this guy called Curly, who died. But he used to do all the kids' hair. And I said, can you cut my hair? And then they were the same. They cut it. And then they eventually shaved it off. And I remember looking in the mirror and going, there you are.
That's amazing. That
instant confidence, instant happy with myself, nativity or whatever.
Yeah.
And then after that, it was just such a pain in the ass to get anyone to cut my hair low enough. So I bought a pair of men's beard trimmers and then I just learned how to do it myself backwards.
Yeah. And that's what you've been doing ever since?
Yeah. It's just, it was just that sense of, it just never suited me. I never found a hairstyle that worked. And then I've grown it a couple of times since, just to double check. But I just look so much better without it.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Planning for your next trip?
Elevate your travel style with Quince.
Quince has all the jet-setting essentials you'll want for your next getaway, like European linen, premium luggage options, buttery soft Italian leather bags, and so much more. And it's all priced at 50 to 80% less than similar brands. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe and ethical manufacturing practices. Pack your bags with high-quality essentials you'll be wearing for vacations to come with Quince. Go to quince.com/pack for free shipping and 365-day returns.
Yeah, I cannot imagine you with hair. You know, it's that skin. Can't imagine it at all. But Skin, so you duetted with some amazing people. So you duetted with Pavarotti in front of the Dalai Lama. What was that like? Because actually I can imagine your voices working really well together.
It was really fun. I actually, tell you a secret, I actually went and stayed with him I went a few days before because he said he wanted to give me some singing lessons.
Oh, thank you very much.
I went down to his house in Monada and we stayed there and just had fun, and he gave me some singing lessons and cooked food. And you know, he was just one of those happy people that just wanted everyone to have a good time and be happy. And and then I basically went to the hotel after a couple of days, because I was a few days early, and I was given George Michael's suite. And then they were so embarrassed not to tell George Michael that I was in his suite because I was early, that they didn't chuck me out and I had his suite for the whole time.
Yeah.
But yeah, he was lovely. It was a really, it was just one of those moments, really, wasn't it? That, you know, I got to sing with, you know.
You sang Happy Birthday for Nelson Mandela.
Yeah, in South Africa, his 80th birthday with Stevie.
I remember that.
Stevie Wonder was playing keyboards, and I was doing lead, and Michael Jackson was doing backup.
Oh yes, that's my girl.
Yeah. Amazing. So that was yeah. He was a bit weird though.
Yeah. What? Who?
Michael Jackson.
Yeah, he was.
Not Mandela was great.
Yeah, yeah. It's a whole nother conversation, but. Just broken, really. A broken person trying to physically, literally hold himself together.
Yeah. I mean, who knows what that guy had actually really been through. And, you know, I guess there's so many variations of the story, you know. But, I think that he was a lot more calculated than people would like to believe. That's what I do believe. Yeah. I mean, no, he didn't have he had his fake voice and his real voice.
Of course, you were the first, you, Skin and Skunk and Nancy, you were the first black female lead to play at Glastonbury, not Beyonce, and more Stormzy.
when you think something and you tweet it and it goes, everyone goes mad about it. It's one of those occasions where I was like, oh, I love Stormzy. And then I said, and then about hours later, everyone starts texting me saying blah 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 blah, and it's gone viral. And I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake, you know. and it was just one of those moments, I guess, that I think a lot of people kind of forget that Skunk and Nancy have done a lot of stuff, you know, that Skunk and Nancy have been around and done some amazing stuff. And I mean, I wasn't the first black person. I think there was somebody else in the 80s. I guess the main thing is there hasn't been very many.
Yeah.
So, I mean, there was Prodigy, Skunk and Nancy, Stormzy.
Wow.
And a few people back in the 80s. And that's kind of a bit about it. I mean, it's just, I guess the thing I felt about it was like how, you know, we do things and then we're so kind of like, oh, but remember we've done this, remember we've done that. I was the first black person to do this and first black person to do that. And I guess that's something that white people never have to do.
Yeah.
So, you know, it's kind of, these are kind of achievements and you feel you kind of have to claim things a lot more than you would like to, which I guess is the issue really, isn't it? It's like, yeah. why aren't there more, why is it a thing? Why are there more headlines of lots of festivals around the world, not just Glastonbury, but... Mm. Quite a few festivals. I think, yes, I was probably the first black person to headline, and also probably the only black person in some countries, I'd say.
Yeah.
And I think this is a product, like when you consider the contribution and how many black artists there are, you know, in all spheres of music, I really do think we're still quite underrepresented when it comes to headline slot, you know, the kind of prestige slots on headline festivals. I think there's so much work there to be done.
Yeah. Well, this is your moment, Skin. It's your opportunity, because you always remain current, and it's kind of you always struck me as someone who never looked back. You're always kind of in the present or looking to the future about where your path is going to go. And I always found it very inspiring from you about you.
That's the fun thing about being an artist. I mean, as you know yourself, there's lots of things that you can do. If you can do this and you can do that, and well, why can't you do this? I mean, I've just written my first book.
Excited about that.
Yeah, and it's only when you stop and look back that you realise all these things that you've done. Mm. You know, I remember the story, I have to tell you my Playboy story.
Okay, tell me.
We were in Las Vegas. We'd done this meeting with this wonderful photographer who shall remain nameless. And we were on this shoot, and it all went wrong from the very first beginning. I mean, imagine we're on a shoot, and the photographer's assistant is giving the photographer lip. Literally, like, he's saying, will you hold the reflector? And the guy's like, oh, I'm holding the reflector. And he's like, no, hold it up straight, dumbass. And he's like, no, you're the dumbass, you know. And you're kind of like, this is the photographer's assistant. I mean, the photographer having an argument while you're trying to stand there looking pretty.
Shoot.
We have 2 days of the worst photo shoot the world has ever known. Literally, none of the sites are researched. No permission or permits for anything. Everything was shut down. Cut to the end of the second day. The photographer has been demanding to have a private meeting with him the whole time. So I was like, okay, let's have a private meeting, because he wants my manager not to be there. And she's refusing. She's like, no. So we have this private meeting. He says, okay, I have this other idea for a photo. I think it's going to be amazing. You naked on top of a velvet sofa with a tiger's head between your legs. So I'm kind of looking at him like, how is that egg going to be of any use for Skunk and Nancy? You know? And no, it's going to be great. And I'm like, no. So cut to the next morning, bang, bang, bang on my door at 7 o'clock in the morning. And Lee, my manager, comes in and says that she was sitting at the bar the night before. And the truck driver for the photographer who had all of his props in there, she said, oh, you know, it's a shame we're not going to get to use the Playboy mascot. And my manager's Lee, she's like, what do you mean the Playboy mascot? Oh, yeah, because he's done a side deal with Playboy. If he can get you with the tiger head mascot between your legs, they're going to do featuring Playboy with you.
You are joking.
Can you imagine? So that was the end of that shoot. But yeah, so I guess he thought that once he took the shots and took the photos, he could just sell them and, you know, we'd find out about it afterwards, but he would be paid and whatever.
Yeah.
So
a very well-known photographer.
He was fired from his agency after that, but I've seen his name pop up.
Yeah. So you travelled, you know, with your band, you've travelled the world. Do you have a comfort blanket? Is it something that you always take with you or something that you can't live without?
Let me get it.
Oh, Skin, I love you. You're so organised.
I don't really have all my stuff here, but I just
see. Okay. Yes, gorgeous little Louis Vuitton.
It's just, I always take this with me because it's just all of the jewellery that I really love in one tiny little packet. Have a look. there is, oh, this is nice. This is Westwood.
Nice, yeah.
I've just got like lots of pieces of lots of kind of makeup, not makeup, sorry, lots of jewellery.
They're fab. Do you know, what's it called? Tilly something. You mainly wear silver jewellery.
I mainly wear gold. Oh, yeah. I wear, because I'm actually allergic to nickel, so I can only wear 18 carat. Yeah, so
look, all silver stuff. Oh, that's good. Oh my love, that's cool.
Lots of Marla Aaron. I have lots of Marla Aaron pieces.
Beautiful.
So I just take this because it's just, you know, you never know when the mood takes you to wear a bit of jewellery. Yeah. And it's just, I wear jewellery for complete pleasure. I just love, like, lots of little pieces. So I just always have, this is my top thing. It's got all of the jewellery that's most important to me. So I know I've always got it with me, so it can never be lost. It's always in my handbag.
Yeah.
And it's just, it's kind of taking little pieces of people that I love and people that I care about. Like, you know, there's a bangle in there for my mum. There's pieces for my girlfriend, there's pieces for my friend. And it's just kind of taking little pieces of all your posse with you.
That's,
it just makes you feel happy.
Yeah.
To know that.
So you'd be lost without that. Imagine if you.
Sometimes I don't even use it and I don't even take things out, but I always have it with me.
Yeah, nice. Yeah. But my darling, so, okay, wardrobe malfunctions. What's the worst? Or have you never had one?
I have many. I mean, I have had. The last time we played Brixton Academy, my trousers were ripped in half down the back. I had to go change them again. One of the worst ones, actually, because things falling apart on stage is kind of okay. It just makes the gig more fun. Actually, I think it's when I met you. It was actually at David Furnish's 40th birthday party in Venice.
Yeah.
And I borrowed this beautiful leather McQueen dress, which was really beautifully fitted and had a little puff sleeve. And it looked absolutely lovely. And I remember you complimented on it. And
because it was a very feminine, shape, wasn't it?
Like, shape, but leather.
Yeah.
And then we were sitting in that room and it was absolutely boiling. And literally halfway through the meal, I thought, oh my God, I'm sweating through the leather. And I could feel it. And I looked down and I could just see, it was like a burgundy colour. And I could see a huge burgundy darker ring under the arms. And I think for me, you know, you're sitting in a room and you're sitting in a room of just celebrity after celebrity. I was sitting next to David LaChapelle.
Yeah.
And I was sitting there thinking, oh my God, I'm a huge. By the time the thing was over, I literally had these big, huge kind of wet welts under my arms. And I was just like, oh, what can I do? What can you do? I was really kind of like, this is not the place that I was. Because I'm not really a sweaty person at all.
No.
Up until the moment.
That's bad, because with leather, if it had been PVC, you would have sweated more, but it would have been fine.
It would have almost shown. And it wasn't, you can't go to the loo and dry it out. It's just going to be like that for hours. When it dries out, it's just going to have a white line around it.
Yeah.
So that was probably my most horrendous fashion. I mean, I've had many, but that's the one I'm like mortified about. Even now, I think about it now, I'm like, oh.
This is kind of weird. I think I can so understand that, because it was a private event and you've got your friends and your peers and people who you haven't met, but people who want to meet. Whereas if it's in public, it's an anonymous audience, you don't really mind so much. But with something like that,
it's people that you want to impress and you want to look good in, and you realise you've just got big, you know, swimming pools under your armpits. Yeah. So that's probably my the one that mortifies me. The rest of them, things happen. Whatever. You know, dresses fall apart, you know, tits falls out or whatever. But that's the one I was kind of, I wanted to be all glamorous, and by the end of it, I just looked like I'd been dragged through a pool backwards.
Never. But darling one, so what about, so McQueen, you've always been a big fan of McQueen. And have you, I mean, what other designers do you love? Because you've been dressed by pretty much everyone.
I love to mix it up with kind of brand new people, as well as with big design label. I think it's important to kind of really kind of promote all the new kids coming up, especially the new kids coming up as well. My favourite right now is Daniel Politti. Have you heard of him?
I'm writing that down. Hang on.
Makes Daniel Politti.
Okay.
He makes these absolutely beautifully well-cut suits, because I'm getting into a suit phase, but I don't necessarily want to have just a normal suit. I want it to be a bit weird and have an edge. So I've been wearing, because I've got these tits now, I've been wearing these little short kind of things that go right in at the waist.
Nice.
And then these beautifully flowing but of kind of juxtaposition cut trousers.
Nice.
And just beautiful, beautifully cut clothes.
By the way, I forgot, you were on that bloody show, what's called The Masked Singer, with Jason, Jeff Shears. And as soon as you came out, I knew exactly who it was immediately. The first note, and I went, oh my God, it's Skin!
It's so funny, because I was hesitant to do it, because I'm like, all my fans are going to guess it. But then you kind of think to yourself, well, it's about the judges not guessing it, because the minute it goes back to TV, people are going to guess it. You know, and that's why it's live, you know. That was mad singing in that thing. It was really fun though, because it was actually very, very difficult. I thought it was just going to be a fun, stupid thing that I would do. I think people in England think that I'm really serious, really aggressive, super political, and that's it. And I just wanted to do it to show, no, actually, I'm a bit of an idiot as well, and I'm a bit silly, and I'm, ridiculous. And I chose the most ridiculous outfit that they showed me.
That's what I love, the fact that you chose the duck, whereas Jason, Jake Shears, of course, went for the sort of fancy unicorn trip on your hand. His vanity got the better of him, as it always does. But it was a good show.
I thought that it was magic, wasn't it? I thought that the further I could possibly be away from Skin, the better. And I just thought, it's going to be, people never in a million years think that I would dress up as a giant rubber duck and go on set.
Yeah.
But, it was really silly. It was really silly. Jake was, I guess Jake as well, I knew that was him straight away. But it was really, he was like that backstage. He was just like this the whole time.
It was like he was in, I saw him when he was there and I actually guessed he was doing the show. He was like, oh my God, you mustn't tell anybody. But darling, I'm going to ask you one final question, which is, what would be your birthday suit? Like your most favourite piece of clothing? And obviously it's not going to be the leather McQueen. So what is your favourite outfit?
If you it's a toss up between two. I think my absolute favourite is this tiny sequined Vivienne Westwood two-piece that I wore for a shoot. And it was a beautifully, it was silver with a cocktail feather detail in sequin. And it was tiny, it was all fitted with a giant pair of pants. And I wore that with a heel. And to this day, I think that was probably the most amazing thing I've ever worn. It was one of those things where I was just like, oh, that's never going to fit me. And it fitted perfectly. And you put it on, I felt like $1 million, honestly. So anyone sees me in this, they're going to want to shag me. That's what I thought. Yeah. It was just one of the sexiest thing ever.
Yeah. You know? You actually are the only woman who could ever have turned me. Only woman who brings out the lesbian in me, Skin. Only woman. Actually, maybe you told us a little bit, but you're my number one.
Thank you. I'm going to wear that one with pride now.
Yeah. Skinny Skin, is there anyone whose style has absolutely blown your mind?
A really recent one, actually. There's only two people in my life that I've actually been dumbstruck. One was the writer Alice Walker, that I just turned into a gibbering mess. But the second was Pauwella. We covered You Do Something to Me when we did an acoustic live in London. And Cass was actually in the park walking his dog and bumped into Pauwella, who's walking his dog. And Pauwella said, I love that version that you did because it was really clean and plain and simple. Loved it. And so then we go to our gig and the week before, and I said, well, why don't we ask Pauwella if you'll come do a duet? You know, I said, we can just ask. And he did. And wow. He turned up in a really beautiful vintage old sports car. Mm-hmm. Just before we went on stage, said a quick hello. And then we started playing the song and he walked on stage. And I literally just lost it. I probably did one of my worst vocal performances of all time. And I said, you do something to me. And he was like, and I was just like, wow. And I was dumbstruck. Probably the only person that I've sung with that's really done that to me. And I've sang with Andrew Botticelli and some amazing people. Yeah. Sinead Connor, I've sung with, who I loved and loved all those people. But I actually just lost, I was looking at him and I forgot all the words and I forgot what I was doing. And I was thinking, this is just a moment of heaven right now.
Yeah, I can imagine. And he is super stylish too. And I love the way he dresses. It's unique to him. And it's kind of like, it's sort of old school mod, but not. He's very subtly updated it and kept it. It enhances him and his age and his maturity. He's really stylish, I agree. Totally.
Yeah, everything he wears is just beautifully cut, works for him, and he's totally confident in it, which is what clothes are supposed to do. They're supposed to make you feel confident, make you feel happy, make you like yourself when you look in the mirror. That's what it's supposed to be about. And I would say, Pauwella, lovely.
All right, my darling. Well, listen, I'm so happy to have seen you, albeit across the pond. And as soon as you get back to the UK, let's hook up. I'd love to see you.
Love to see you too. And congratulations on the podcast. I've seen them all. They're really fun.
Oh, darling, I love you so much. And I send you a big, big fat kiss.
Absolutely. Back to you.
All right, sweetie. Bye. See you soon.
Hold up. What was that? Boring. No flavor. That was as bad as those leftovers you ate all week. Keke Palmer here. And it's time to say hello to something fresh and guilt-free. HelloFresh. Jazz up dinner with pecan-crusted chicken or garlic butter shrimp scampi. Now that's music to my mouth. HelloFresh. Let's get this dinner party started. Discover all the delicious possibilities at HelloFresh.com.